You're listening to Wheelationships.
We're talking about these trust behaviors, how to increase your trust dividend with others. If you increase your trust dividend with others, it makes things easier, it makes things quicker, it costs you less. And some of the trust behaviors we've talked about so far, we talked about talk straight, say what you mean what you say, do it with respect. The more respect you show, your trust goes up. Create transparency. The more open you are, the more honest you are, people trust you more. Fully apologize. When you do make a mistake, go back. Address it. Fix it. Be loyal. We talked about this last week. The more loyalty you show, the more trust you have. Listen first before you jump in with all your great solutions and try to do stuff. Listen first. And before you do anything, clarify expectations. If the expectations aren't clear, and you're just acting away, you're going to limit your trust. Let's start this morning with a story, familiar Bible story, 1 Samuel. You have it in your notes. One day, Samuel said to Saul, "It was the Lord who told me to anoint you as king of his people Israel. Now listen to this message from the Lord. This is what the Lord of heaven's armies has declared. I have decided to settle accounts with the nation of Amalek for opposing Israel when they came from Egypt. Now go and completely destroy the entire Amalekite nation. Men, women, children, babies, cattle, sheep, goats, camels, and donkeys." God was being a little tough. "Then Saul slaughtered the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, east of Egypt. He captured Agag, the Amalekite king, but completely destroyed everyone else. Saul and his men spared Agag's life and kept the best of the sheep and goats, the cattle, the fat calves, and the lambs, everything, in fact, that appealed to them." Notice the reasoning there. Everything that appealed to them. "They destroyed only what was worthless or of poor quality." "Then the Lord said to Samuel, 'I am sorry that I ever made Saul king, for he has not been loyal to me,'" notice, "'and has refused to obey my command.' Samuel was so deeply moved when he heard this that he cried out to the Lord all night. Early the next morning, Samuel went to find Saul. Someone told him Saul went to the town of Carmel to set up a monument to himself." Okay, now let's stop right there. Remember when we were talking about the four cornerstones of credibility and how humility is kind of important? Just point that out. Saul, yeah, he wasn't here for that class. Then he went on to Gilgal, Samuel did. Verse 13, "When Samuel finally found him, Saul greeted him cheerfully. 'Hey, may the Lord bless you,' he said. 'I have carried out the Lord's command.' 'Then what is all the bleating of sheep and goats and the lowing of cattle I hear?' Samuel demanded. 'It's true that the army spared the best of the sheep, goats, and cattle,' Saul admitted, 'but they're going to sacrifice them to the Lord your God. We have destroyed everything else.'" Then you skip on down to verse 19. "Why haven't you obeyed the Lord? Why did you rush for the plunder and do what was evil in the Lord's sight?" "But I did obey the Lord," Saul insisted. "I carried out the mission he gave me. I brought back King Agag, but I destroyed everyone else. Then my troops brought in the best of the sheep, goats, cattle, and plunder to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal." Okay. You catch up on your notes here. All right. So here you have. This is a story about obedience. I mean, that kind of jumps out at you right at first. But because we've been going through this whole thing with trust, you look at the story and you can very easily see that it's also a story about trust. It's a story about, if you look at it, you can see the element where God no longer trusts Saul. From this point on, he does not trust Saul with the kingdom that he gave him. He had put Saul in the place of king. He had given him stewardship as king over the kingdom. It wasn't really Saul's kingdom. It's God's kingdom. And he said, "I'm going to give you this, and I'm going to put you in the place as king." But now God says, "I can't trust you anymore. You're done. Your trust tax is way too much for you to pay. From this point on, he's done. And throughout this specific story, when you look through this, Saul exhibited a characteristic, a behavior that generates low trust, which was his refusal of this particular behavior. It was a refusal to confront reality. He did not want to confront reality. Ever been in a situation, maybe at home, maybe at work, where there's an issue that no one wants to talk about? Everybody knows it's there. It's the elephant in the room. It's the thing that's just right there, and nobody really wants to address it. It could be somebody's attitude. It could be somebody's action. It could be a long-standing issue. A lot of you spent time with relatives this weekend. You've probably come up with one of these things that, you know, and if you can't think of it, maybe it's you. I'm not sure. And this issue that nobody wants to address slows everything down, makes everything harder, makes everything cost more. Maybe not in dollars and cents, but maybe just in time and effort and emotional energy. The emotional energy is just so drained because of this issue that nobody wants to talk about. Maybe it has been talked about at some point, and maybe it caused such kerfuffle that nobody ever wants to talk about that again. Let's not bring that up again.
Say that again.
Look that one up later. I do have a class of middle schoolers who get distracted at everything. Hey, I resemble that remark.
Right. Yeah. What's the spelling on that again?
I'll spell it for you later. Kerfuffle. K-E-R. Yeah, there you go. Golly. Okay, here's the reality here. You guys are way too distracted. Okay, so when all this is going on and you've got this and nobody wants to address, that's the time where you have to confront reality appropriately. And this goes back to, we talked about creating transparency, where you're open and you're honest. But at the same time, it goes back to respect, where you do it with a level of respect. Transparency gets the real issues out in the open, where you see them and where you address them. So what is it to confront reality? Well, what it is taking the tough issues head on. It's discussing the undiscussables. It's talking about the things you don't really want to talk about. This is really, I think, what Pastor was talking about in this series he ended last week on Job. Job had to go through some very tough issues. Job had all this stuff going on, and he had to address it head on. Job didn't say, problems? What problems? I don't know what you're talking about. You know. His friends came to him, and they were all up in his face, and his wife was there, and she was saying, curse God and die. And he didn't say, I'm okay, I'm good. Don't worry about it. It's fine. I'm good. There's no problems. He said, no, there's problems. And I need to address these problems. I need to confront reality. It wasn't confronting his friends. It wasn't confronting his wife. It wasn't confronting even God. It was confronting the fact that there are issues here. And I'm going to face them head on. Well, what is it not? It's not kicking the tires. Now, there's an old phrase. I wrote that down, and then I went, wait a minute. I got some people that probably go, what? What? How many of you have no idea what that phrase means? Okay. I see. I knew Rachel was here. So back when, and there's a couple of different... I've heard the reason for this phrase a couple different ways, but really it, some people say it was covered wagons, and I don't know. No. It was, you know, back when inflatable tires were new, inflatable tires were new and they weren't all that good. If you kicked the tires, you could tell, A, whether or not they were actually pneumatic tires or whether they weren't, and B, whether or not they were going to pop like the minute you touched them. And that's what you did when you bought a car, you'd kick the tires, you know. And the thing is, the funny thing is, when tires got better, people would still kick the tires, right? How many of you have been to a car lot and you've kicked the tires? For absolute, now you may be kicking them to see how the front end does or whatever, but you really got to lift it up and do that. Kicking the tires really doesn't make a whole lot of sense now, and it's going to tell you nothing about what is going on under the hood. I mean, it's not going to tell you anything about the engine. And how many of you do this? You pop the hood and you look at the engine. Yep, it's got one. Okay. I do that. I honestly do that. Just, you know, so I can, like, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. That's an engine right there. What's that got a, that's got a three, exactly. That's the thing about confronting reality. Am I going to positively go on the offense and get to the details and really address the issue, or am I going to kick the tires? Raise the hood, poke around, go, yep, yeah, and not do anything about it. Just talk about it and say, yeah, we got an issue. Nothing. Am I going to tackle the tough issue in order to improve it? Or am I just going to get defensive? Am I going to just do a lot of busy work that looks like I'm doing something and really kind of get around the real issue, evade it? King Saul, you look at that story, and he had some character issues that cost him the trust he had been given. And when he was confronted, Samuel came and he confronted him with the reality of what he had done, confronted him with what was really going on and the fact that he had this character issue. And Saul instead uses some common defense mechanisms. He first denies it. No, I obeyed. He did some blame shifting. Well, the guys took some stuff. Yeah, they took some stuff, and you know, they were. And he, what else did he do? He did some justification on it. They took some stuff, but they were going to sacrifice to your God. It's pretty good, right? You know, and he wouldn't get to the character issue that he lacked courage, he lacked integrity. His agenda was wrong. He wouldn't do it. He was all into the defense mechanism. He was not going to tackle the tough issue. I ran across a list of some common, and I got a verse here for you. Saul admitted to Samuel, "Yes, I have sinned. I have disobeyed your instructions and the Lord's command." For it's not on your handout. That's why it's up here. "I have disobeyed your instructions and the Lord's command, for I was afraid of the people and what they demanded." Again, that's a little bit of blame shifting, but it gets closer to the real issue. Okay? But it wasn't the real issue. Okay? He said, "I was afraid of the people." He's like, "Oh, I was afraid of the people. Whoa." No, he wasn't. He wasn't afraid of them at all. He was selfish. He was self-centered. He was greedy. He may have been a little afraid too. There may have been a little truth mixed in there. That's one of these things here. You have some defense mechanisms we use. We use arguing. You know, if you want to avoid the real issues, then argue about it. We use blaming. We use compensation. In other words, we try to compensate for our failure by saying, but I did really good here. You know, I might really stink here, you know. Gators have a terrible offense, but boy, we got a good defense. So what? Compliance. This is when you just flip. You go, oh, I'm a failure. I never do anything right. Oh, I'm so horrible. You're right. I'm just the worthless. I'm terrible. Okay. And that's the other side. That's going to the other extreme. Okay. We use excuses. We use fantasy. You know, instead of dealing with some real tough issues in our life, we just kind of fantasize. Oh, you know, really, what if I won the lottery? Yeah, that would be great. And then I could, you know, do this and blah, 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 blah. Okay, avoid. Let's go back to the real issue, okay? Humor. Yeah, I'm an idiot. Justifying. You know, we justify. Again, this is sort of like the other one, the compensation, but this is when we kind of do it with other people. Well, they're doing it too. I mean, I'm not any worse than they are. My issues aren't any... I mean, look at their issues. My goodness gracious me. Okay. Lie, we just flat out lie. No, it's not. I don't have an issue. What issue? We minimize it. Say, you know, it's not really that big. It's not that big of a deal. Is it that big of a deal? It's not that big of a deal. Projection, where we, you know, this, you know, really, you think I have an issue? Maybe it's you that have the issue. Maybe, you know, he who smelt it dealt it. I'm just saying that maybe the stink is on you. Okay. Repression. You know, I don't remember. What are you talking about? What are we talking about again? You know, it's like we get the issue and we kind of turn around and get. No, I don't remember that at all. You know, self-deception. You know, I can handle this. You know, I can do this. I can quit anytime I want. Or we just use silence. You know. What about the issue? All right. Those are all defense mechanisms, common defense mechanisms. I'm sure maybe you've seen other people use those. I'm not sure. Many of you may remember, Admiral James Stockdale. Remember that guy? Let me remember that guy. Bob's laughing because he remembers him in a certain way. Admiral, he was the guy who's most commonly remembered as being the running mate of Ross Perot back in '92, okay, and for our younger people, they go no, no idea. Remember him? He was the older guy, and he ran and he got into debate with Quayle, and there was three of them. I don't remember who they were, but and they got into debate and he just the debate was went really badly for Admiral Stockdale. And that's unfortunate because other people remember Admiral Stockdale from before in Vietnam. He was a decorated veteran, and most famously, he was a POW for 8 years. And during Vietnam, he was kept in leg irons in a bath stall for 8 years, routinely tortured and beaten, and when his captors told him that he was going to be paraded in public, he slit his scalp with a razor to disfigure himself so that they couldn't use him as propaganda. And so they covered his head with a hat and said they were going to do it anyway, so he beat himself with a stool until his face was swollen beyond recognition because he was not going to let the enemy use him for propaganda. He was a war hero. And he was once asked, who didn't make it out of Vietnam? And he said, that's easy. It was the optimists. It was the ones who said, we're going to be out by Christmas. And Christmas would come, and they weren't out. And so they say, we'll be out by Easter. And Easter didn't come, and it didn't happen. They were the ones that didn't want to face reality, who didn't want to confront reality. He said this. He said, you must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. You don't let it go of faith. You don't let go of the fact that you're going to prevail in the end. God is on the throne, and he's with us and for us and never stops loving us. But that can't stand in the way of confronting the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. If we fail to deal with the real issues for whatever reason, for whatever excuse we might have, people are either going to think that we're lacking in character, that we're not open, that we're not honest, that we're not transparent, that we're not talking straight, or they may feel that we're lacking in competence because we're so clueless to what's going on around us. We don't know what the issues are. Either way, your trust is going to be diminished. People are not going to trust you if you don't confront the reality. So, easy question. Why don't we confront reality? Why don't we?
I have a
question. Yeah. Would have been hard, but it was the job to do. And he did it. The thing is, he did it. He killed everybody except the king, and he kept the good stuff. Okay. But why don't we confront reality?
Because it hurts.
Hurts. It's uncomfortable.
We could be wrong.
We could be wrong. Okay. But doesn't reality hurt already? Yeah. Many times, I mean, the issues are there. They're hurting. They're discomforting. They're aggravating. They're irritating, or whatever they are. And
we don't want to change.
Don't want to change. Yeah.
We're comfortable with that, even though it's painful.
There you go.
It might be worse.
Yeah. We're afraid it's going to get worse. Yeah. Again, I'm waiting for your answers. I don't know.
I think sometimes we don't feel we can change it, or it'll be too difficult to change, so it's better to ignore it than not be.
We hope it's just going to change on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We want to, avoid discomfort.
I think most people don't want to take responsibility for their part in the problem.
Don't want to take responsibility? It's, it's not my fault. Yeah.
We need to let the Holy Spirit direct us what we
want. Yeah. Why don't we? Why don't we?
Takes time.
We get impatient.
Yeah. Yeah. We just jump in and fix it.
Yeah. We want the easy way. We want the easy fix. Some people, I think. Path of least resistance. Path of least resistance. We want it easy. We want it comfortable. We want it to just happen. I think sometimes we don't want to limit our choices. We know that if we tackle some tough issues, we're going to have to make some choices. If you get into an issue, you're going to have to make a tough choice. You're going to have to say, well, it's going to be this way. That may not be the best way. I don't know, but we're going to have to make a choice. And so if I face my finances, I might have to actually pay attention to my budget. I'm going to have to make some tough choices. If I tackle the tough issues of my relationships, then I may have to give up some things. If I tackle my own personal issues, I may have to make some choices in what I will do and what I won't do. And here's the hard cost of reality. If I choose to go left, I can't go right. And see, oftentimes we want to go both ways at the same time. If I go right, I can't go left. It's a choice. The harder cost of facing reality is that going left or right, if I wait, may no longer be an option. Because refusing to confront reality won't make reality easier. It will only decrease your options and increase the final cost. A lot of times we don't want to tackle the tough issues because we're afraid that we're going to somehow limit our options. But if we don't tackle it, our options will be limited. You don't tackle your finances, there will come a time where you'll run out of options. If you don't tackle your tough personal issues, there will come a time where you will run out of options. And now the cost is going to be far greater than what it was to begin with. I think sometimes we can confuse acceptance and approval. The Bible teaches that love is unconditional. God loves us unconditionally. The Bible does not say that God approves of us unconditionally, because he does not. He did not approve of what Saul was doing. He loved him completely. He did not approve. And sometimes we get that confused and go, well, I can just all my options and, you know, it'll all be okay. And God will, you know, if he really loves me, he'll approve of everything I do. No, wrong. So how do we get better behavior? Well, I'll just give you one thing. There are many things, but obviously you have to confront reality. But confrontation must include follow through. Confrontation must include follow through. Someday I'm going to stop and just ask everybody what they have filled in before I put that up. Confrontation must improve follow through. Every golfer knows this. Confront the ball, you better follow through, or it's not going to go the direction you think it's going to go. Just bringing up the problem isn't enough. It doesn't go far enough. I must identify the hard realities, but I must follow through on addressing them. Because if I identify the realities and I don't follow through, I'll end up with a withdrawal from my trust account, not a deposit. Because then I know the issue and I still don't do anything about it, then what is that? That's a complete failure of trust. All right? So that's confront reality. Any comments there before I move on?
Isn't that considered rebellion?
Yeah, disobedience, rebellion, a lot of things. And the failure, well, we'll talk about that in just a second. Anything else? Because the failure to follow through, the failure to obey, is a failure to deliver results. Deliver results. Delivering results is absolutely the fastest way to build trust. You want to build trust with somebody? Deliver results. Get it done. What is it? What is delivering results? Well, delivering results is delivering results. There's really no else. I tried to come up with a different way to say that. But the reason I wrote that is because what it isn't. What it isn't is delivering activities. We talked about this when we talked about our credibility and our actions. We can deliver a bunch of activities and not really deliver results. But if you deliver results, then you deliver what's expected on time, when, where, and how it's supposed to be. I read a story about a man who had two sons, and not the one that Jesus told in the Gospels, but another guy. And the first son was given the task of taking out the garbage every week. And his job was simply to take the cans out on Wednesday night, bring them up on Thursday morning. It was more difficult because the guy's driveway was really steep and they lived north of here. So when it rained or when it snowed, it was kind of tough to get those cans down and get the cans back up. And the thing was, they would have to remind the son every week, did you take the garbage out? No, I get to it in a minute. And every week they remind him. And half the time, it didn't get done. Well, the son got a little older, and he had a younger son who finally got to be about 12 years old, and he gave the younger son the job. And he said, I told him once, I never told him again. He never brought it up. But every Wednesday, the cans were out there. Every Thursday, the cans were back. Now, which son do you think was easier to listen to when they wanted something? Which son was it had built up a little bit in his trust account? One that delivered results, who just got it done, who didn't need to be reminded, who didn't have to crow about it and go, hey, I got the trash out. Just did the job. It was quicker for the parents. It was easier to extend some privileges. Delivering results almost always gives a person more choices, more options, more flexibility. When you deliver results, people take notice. Someone said, delivering results is how you convert the cynics. And how many of us in the room think of Tim Tebow right there? Okay, right now, if you don't follow football, Tim Tebow is playing football, and he does like a lot of things wrong as a quarterback, so they say. Throws it wrong. He's winning, okay? He's just winning. And so people are giving him a pass, okay? He still plays quarterback kind of the same way, but when you deliver results, you convert a lot of cynics. So how do we get better at this behavior? How do we deliver a result? How is it better? Well, first, get the right things done. Get the right things done. One big way to get better at delivering results is to do what we talked about last week and clarify the expectations. If you haven't clarified the expectations to know what the right thing is to get done, you're going to get the wrong thing done. If you get the wrong thing done, that's not results. I might be delivering something that I think is a desired result, but it's viewed as a worthless activity by someone else. What are you doing that for? Second, match commitments with reality. Now, which means simply this, don't overpromise. I'm going to get this done by 5 o'clock, okay? And there's no way you can get that done by 5 o'clock, okay? Well, I was just being optimistic and hopeful. You were lying. To both of us. I might really want to please everyone in my life, so I overpromise and I try to do everything. But the reality is I can't. Don't make promises for which you'll have to make excuses later on. Because that's an automatic trust withdrawal. Match commitments with reality. Thirdly, develop proper empathy. At the same time that we shouldn't overpromise and underperform, we should anticipate the needs of others. Because when you're able to deliver results before the results were even asked for, that builds big trust. When you're able to, and how do you do that? You just guess? You've clarified expectations. And you have a relationship and you know, when you know, go ahead and do it. Get it done. And that takes proper empathy. Okay? Anything else? Let's move on. Last one for today. Get better. What do I mean by get better? Well, growing and improving our capabilities. This is a direct application of one of those four foundations we talked about of personal credibility, our capabilities. If others see us as incapable, they're not going to trust us. If others see our capabilities as shrinking rather than growing, they're going to trust us less. And really, if you're not moving ahead, then you're just falling farther behind. If your capabilities are not growing and improving, then they're getting worse because the world's moving on. Okay? Even in relationships, okay? You have to keep growing and you have to keep improving. So, well, I'm just the same guy she married. That's the problem. She was hoping for a little better by now, okay? Should learn a little more. Most of us know the old saying that if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. But the truth is, if you do what you've always done, you'll get even less than you got before. In your notes, 1 Peter says, in view of all this, make every effort to respond to God's promises. Supplement your faith with a generous provision of moral excellence, and moral excellence with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with patient endurance, and patient endurance with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love for everyone. The more you grow like this, the more productive and useful you will be in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ, and the more people will trust you. I just added that last part, but I think God's okay with that. What isn't getting better? Well, not it isn't becoming the eternal student. We should never stop learning, but at some point you have to start doing. It's the very real danger we have in coming to this class in this church every week. He didn't call us to be the eternal students. He called us to live it out. Not just learning, but doing. So how do we get better? How do we get better? Well, first, seek and effectively utilize feedback. Ask, how am I doing? And respond appropriately. Get on the scale. Balance your checkbook. Those are good ways to get some feedback. And I'm not going to be able to get better with nothing but my own opinion. I need the outside perspective of others. See, this is just another aspect of confronting reality, right? Getting the feedback. And people that do this really well, people that get good feedback, because there are some people that get good feedback, ask for feedback, and they do it poorly. And there are some people that do this really well, and they build trust when they do it, because when they do it, they not only solicit and utilize the feedback from other people, but they thank the people who give them feedback. And they let them know how they're going to follow up with that feedback. Thank you for that feedback. And you know, here's what I'm going to do with that. Here's what I think I should do. What do you think about that? And get feedback on the feedback. Here's some sample feedback questions you can use. What is the one thing we're doing right now that you think we should continue doing? What do you think we're doing well? What do you think we're doing right now that you think we should stop doing? What do you think we're not doing right now that we think we should start doing? Just, there's many more feedback questions, probably some specific to you that you need to ask. And secondly, reframe your mistakes, hey, it's the same word, as feedback. Our fear of making mistakes many times stops us from getting better. We're afraid to try because we're afraid to fail. But every time we make a mistake, it should be feedback. It shouldn't be a club to go, oh, I'm a failure. I just need to stop trying to get better. No, you need to really get better, and you need to use that failure as a feedback. Use the mistakes. Here's this quote, like this quote, one with this note, because it all rhymes. You learn nothing from your successes except to think too much of yourself. It is from failure that all growth comes, provided you can recognize it, admit it, learn from it, rise above it, and then try again. Have a great week. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.